Okay. I picked up a book recently called Shadchanus in Halacha by Rabbi Shlomi Dickman with Rabbi Tzadok Katz. And I found it very fascinating reading. And then I looked at some of the summaries of the Halacha and the Pisklei Choshen and the Sefer Dinei Mamonos and the Aruch HaShulchan and the Shulchan Aruch, Pisklei Tshuva, and so forth. A lot of different sources, listened to some other shiurim, and thought that this would be a good topic to cover because there is a lot of shadchanus that goes on, a lot of people who are involved in making shidduchim, and there are gifts that are given afterwards, but what we don't realize is that the gifts that are given afterwards for the making of shidduchim, it's actually a payment. It's not considered to be optional. It's considered to be mandatory. I remember that when I was much younger, when I was probably still in my early 20s, and I made a shidduch at that point in time involving one of my chaverim, is now a Rosh Yeshiva, and the night of the wedding, I went to the chasana, and I came home, figured, okay, nice chasana, and I was happy to be zochet to be a part of it. Then I hear the doorbell ringing. It must be like well after midnight. And the Chassan and Kala came to my house. And they dropped off a very beautiful set of Sfarim as a Shadchanus Geld, as appreciation. They didn't want to start off without giving me something. So I thought it was very, very nice. But in general, we haven't had Dinei Torah so much regarding disputes of shadchanim who feel that they weren't paid properly, or of couples who feel that they're being overcharged. However, if you look in the various svarim, so Rav Ezra Batzri and the Sefer Dinei Mamonos said that this happens. Sometimes you have bad behavior on both sides. You have shadchanim who are very pushy and want to collect more money than really is the going rate. And sometimes you have couples that really stiff the shadchanim, and they don't pay the shadchanim when there's an expectation to do so. Yes, Rabbi Mitenki.
Define what you mean by shadchanim.
Shadchanim is an interesting question. So one of the things we have to discuss is what does it mean to be a shadchan? What does it mean to be entitled to a payment for having facilitated a shidduch? You figure that that's a pretty easy term to define. Matchmaker, you know, please make me a match. That used to be in the communities. You knew who the matchmakers were. And the poskim do distinguish between professional shadchanim and people who are just doing it as a favor. In fact, to be a shadchan, one of the criteria is that you have to be sort of a disinterested or a distant party. If you're the party yourself, like let's say that the chassan was a boy who just mustered up the courage to go after the kala on his own because they met somewhere in the street and there wasn't even an event that anybody facilitated. They just saw her somewhere and he goes over and asks her out and they start dating and there's no shadchan in the picture at all. So can he turn to her afterwards and say, okay, it's very nice, we're married, I want my shadchanus. So the answer is no. If you're the Baal Dover, you don't get shadchanus. The same thing. You have parents who think of a good idea. They have a father who approaches a different father. I just had a shidduch like that with one of my sons. The father approached me that he thought that I heard about my son and thought that my son would be a good idea for his daughter. And so they went out. They went out once. But at the end of something like that, a parent is not entitled to shadchanus if it would work out. Because we assume that's a Baal Dover. There is no third party that was retained or who inserted themselves into the picture. So let's go through, first of all, where this idea comes from. We don't necessarily find a parasha in the Torah that speaks about shadchanus per se, and where in the Shulchan Aruch is this defined, and what are the obligations based upon, and how do you define the amount of who's the shadchan, how do you define the amount of money. And we'll talk about can it be waived, and how can you tell if it was waived? Is there an implied waiver in certain cases, and so forth? And maybe we'll tell some stories in this book. This one of the nice things about this book is that after about the first 100 pages, and there's another 80 pages afterwards of like 15 different stories of things that happened and different disputes that arose. having to do with the payment of Shadchanus. Some of them are very entertaining. So the Gemara in Shabbos and Daf Tzadi Hei Yom Aleph indicates that making Shiduchim is something that started out with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because the Gemara over there says derives in the Pasuk V'Yibin Hashem Elokim HaSatzela, HaKadosh Baruch Hu created something from the side of Adam HaRishon, Melamed Asher Kila, Lashon of the V'Yibin is a Lashon of Binyan. We say that on Shabbos, if a woman braids her hair, that's considered to be bone. That Vayivan Hashem Elokim Esatzelu means the Kodesh Baruch Hu braided Chava, that he braided her hair, braided her, made her presentable for Adam, Revia Eitzel Adam, that Kodesh Baruch Hu made the Shidduch between Adam and Chava. And the Medrash Rabbah, Beyukah Rabbah, Parshaches, speaks about a matronisa, some matron, a non-Jewish matron, who approached Rabbi Yossi Bar Chalapta and said, the Kodesh Baruch Hu created the world in 6 days. What's he been doing since then? So he says, oh, what's he been doing? Mizabik Zivugim. He's been, this is Kodesh Baruch Hu's enterprise. And she said, oh, come on, that's easy, I could do that. And she put a bunch of Abadim and Shrachos together, and they all started whipping each other, and they all came back the next day with black eyes and broken wrists and broken kneecaps and what have you. And they all started complaining to her, what did you do to us? So she realized, oh, wow, you know, you were right, that this really does require the intervention of a Kodesh Baruch Hu for husbands and wives not to beat each other up. So obviously there's the divine providence in Shiduchim. So the Shulchan HaOzer at Simen Gimel Sif Aleph, Shulchan HaOzer was written by Rav Yitzchak Tzvi Lebovich. He was a great Talmud Chacham in Poland. He was killed in Auschwitz. He was killed in Auschwitz, unfortunately. He wrote a wonderful sefer on Eben HaEzer called the Shulchan HaEzer. So he writes that what is it that caused Moshe Rabbeinu, we call him a Yalkut Shimoni, to have a shining countenance, Keren Or Panov. Because he served as a shatran between the Jewish people and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Medrash in Sefer Dvarim talks about how he was the shatran in terms of the Hashem giving the Torah to the Jewish people. So he says that we see that, first of all, Moshe Rabbeinu got shatranu. So here's where we see the payment of a person who's a shatran gets payment. HaKadosh Baruch Hu paid Moshe Rabbeinu.
We're giving him his
carne or? Okay, so we stretch it a little bit. Ksas mitzvah, the shadech bate yisrael zeh lezeh, that we see that there's a mitzvah to be a shatran, because this was something, he says, that we see from Moshe Rabbeinu. V'gam shayach b'inyan zeh ksas ledovka bo. We also see that this is, what's the nature of the mitzvah? That we have a mitzvah, behalachta bidracha. We're supposed to emulate the ways of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hadbeik midoisav, mevuah b'medrash rabah, parshasav, HaKadosh Baruch Hu meishabar olamu mizavik zivugim. This is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu has been doing since the creation of the world. So therefore, when you make a zivug, you're emulating the ways of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's very interesting because of the fact that it's considered to be such a mitzvah. Normally, you don't take money, right, for a mitzvah, but it's, there's some of the poskim explain it's like skabatola. Okay, you would be doing other things, so you instead of whatever it is that you were trained to do or could do otherwise, so you make a shidduch, so you're entitled to Skar Batala for your time. So this sefer Shiduchim in Halacha, of course, Shadchanus in Halacha, quotes up from the Stipler Gaon, that the Stipler Gaon said that this is like the ultimate kosher gelt. We talk about mamon kosher money. Because of the fact that you're doing such a mitzvah on such a lofty level, this is the main activity of a Kodesh Baruch and keeping the world going, it's a halachta bidrach of his kosher gel. And the quote from the Maharal, that Maharal would bidavka acquire his dal and minim, that he would use for the mitzvah of lulav and esrog, he would bidavka acquire it from shadchanus gelt, because it's considered to be the loftiest. So I thought that it's really the highest level is to do it for free, do it just for the sake of the mitzvah. Somebody wants to give you a gift, they give you. I mean, I certainly wasn't doing it when I was a young bachar. I wasn't doing it for money or because I expected the doorbell to ring late at night, you know, with a beautiful set of svarim. But the halacha is that no, it's something which is perfectly reasonable and perfectly virtuous to make money off of this. especially if it will encourage people to get involved. It's one of the questions that you're asked. L'acha me'avesim shana, asakta b'priya v'rivya, were you involved with making shidduch? Well, priya v'rivya sounds like, were you involved in trying to have children? But the Maharsha says, pshat is that you set people up, that you set up a yosom and a yosoma together, people who needed help with shidduchim. It's a big mitzvah, and therefore this is considered to be a very lofty exercise. But what is it, the basis for what's the type of work that we're talking about? So the Ramban Choshen Mishpat Siman Kuf Pei Hei in the discussion about Hilchos Shluchin. So the Ramban says a shatkan is like a sarsur. A shatkan is like a broker, that brokers are entitled to get paid because they help to bring together a buyer and a seller. They bring together two different parties in order to have a meeting of minds to effectuate a business transaction, and you pay something to the broker. Take a look at Source Ches, the Gemara Bava Metzia, Daf Samakim Lamed Beis, in a different context, talking about when you have a regular transaction, if you're able to not do it through a broker, you're actually saving money because Amalei of Abba, the Rava, the Rava, by the Mesa Zuzi the Safsira, everybody understands that a broker is entitled to get paid. So this is the nature of the job. Whatever halachos apply to a sarsor, apply to a broker in the normal course. So we say that it's a general rule. The shadchan is entitled to be paid for the same types of considerations. Now, there are two different ways that a shadchan can be involved in the picture. One is that somebody approaches an individual and says, "I want you to make a shidduch. I want you to make a shidduch between my son and your daughter." Another way is that a person just has a bright idea and approaches one of the parents or one of the parties and says, "I have a great shidduch idea for you." And they come up with it on their own. So some say if they come up with it on their own, so then it's sort of like a lower level type of a worker, which would be equivalent to a yoyred l'socha sadeh chavero. That's what the Gros says in Sor Zion. The Gros in Sor Zion, commenting on a halacha in the Shulchan Aruch from the Ramah in Simen Pei Zayin, about if you have a dispute regarding the payment of shadchanus, of how much should be paid. So he says we treat it like any other taina in terms of whether a person is mod v'mixas, kofer bakol, does he have a shvua, do you not have a shvua, and so forth. So the Vilna Gaon takes that as an opportunity to wax eloquent about the enterprise of shadchanos. So Vilna Gaon says, "Din shadchanos kosub maram shumidin hayored d'stei chaveru shlo b'rishus." It's like you go into a person's field. You aren't invited to go into the person's field, and you start to plant. You plant seeds. You plant vegetables in the field. Shimhaisa sada asuya lita. If it was a field that was intended for planting, that, and we know that the person would want to have the field planted, and you did the person a favor, so then you're entitled to be paid. So the Vilna Gaon says that's the nature of shadchanus. So sheomdin kama adam mosalitein besadazu lenota. How much would a person be willing to pay to have it planted? Who kamo sarsor? And he says it's similar to the way that a sarsor gets. But what does it mean? Similar to a sarsor? Says that a sarsor also can function in that fashion. That's a simple reading of the Vilna Gaon, that a sarsor, a middle person, could also kind of call you on the phone and say, "I have an opportunity for you. I know that you're looking to buy an investment property. I know somebody who's looking to sell something, and I want to bring the two of you together." We know that it could be a lucrative profession. We know that the broker, the people who are brokers, could be very, very persistent, right? They're the same people. Often a woman who's a real estate broker will also be a shadchan in her spare time. It's a similar type of personality. It's like I used to get calls when I worked as a lawyer. I would get calls from the headhunters. Oh, boy. I didn't have to call the headhunters, believe me. They found me. They knew that you had the young associates in law firms, so they were ripe for the plucking. Often they were looking to make a career change, and they were looking to make, you know, shidduchim. They were so often the this type of profession. You're a sarsor, you're a broker. So often they're very aggressive, and they're the ones who approach the parties rather than the other way around. So the Vilna Gaon makes that equation. It ends up being a major discussion halacha among the poskim. as to whether ultimately a shatran has this din of yored or has a din of just a regular worker. And some say it depends. Was the shatran hired by the people? If the people approached them, then they're like a regular worker. And if they're the ones who sort of initiated the job, so then they have the din of a yored, of somebody who just kind of insinuated themselves on the situation where they have to get paid if they confer a benefit, but they might have lesser rights. So some of the lesser rights are that if you have a regular worker, so when the worker comes to the end of the job and they're entitled to be paid, you don't pay them right away, you violate Baal Tolin. That you're not allowed to delay the payment of a worker. If it's a yored, there's no violation of Baal Tolin per se. I mean, it's to get paid, but if you don't pay right away, so you haven't violated Baal Tolin. A yored could be terminated at any time. You have a poel, and the poel is doing a nice job. You may have an obligation to keep the poel, or if you fire the poel, then the poel could have finished the job, so maybe you have to pay the poel what the poel would have earned, or at least what poel batel, a fraction of what the poel would have earned if they would have been allowed to continue the job. There's a particular expense that the shatran decides to bear in order to bring about the shidduch. If you don't ask the shatran to incur the expense, they can't necessarily ask for reimbursement. But if you specifically approach somebody and you said, I want you to make an effort to bring this person over here and get them a plane ticket so that they'll meet my daughter or something like that, so then there's more of an argument that you're obligated to pay the person. If the person is a yored, so then they don't have to be paid in money, they could be paid in a shavah kesef. If they're a poel, so they have to be paid in actual money. So there are actual differences. Some say, and they made the argument in this book over here, that quoting a Maharshag of Shimon Greenwald, dying in Europe, that perhaps, really, even if the person starts out as a yored, once there's an approval for the person to continue, and the parents or the parties, you know, ask the person their advice and ask them to intervene and to continue to assist the couple, and everyone's reporting to the shatran afterwards, so then they've been hired. Certainly from that point forward, they've been hired as an actual poel, and then they would be subject to all these other rules. There's also an nafkamina in terms of a payment. How much do you pay the person? So a shatran would get paid. If they are hiring the shatran as such, they get paid at the going rate of whatever shatran is. So you only have to pay the person according to the how much you were nene. The benefit could be that you saved the trouble of approaching a different shatran, but you may have found the shatran that charges the lowest possible rate. So then you might get away with only having to pay the lowest possible rate. How much do you pay the shatran? So it really all depends on minug. You have to, I was just asking my wife the other day, I said, you know, if we have children who are entering the Parsha Shidduchim, we have to, you know, budget, we have to figure out, you know, how much is Shatranus these days. So in some communities, it's $1,000, some communities it's $2,000, $3,000, whatever it is. The minhag is that it generally gets shared by the two different parties. You have a chassan side, you have a kala side, and they share it. Who has the obligation? Is the obligation upon the parents? Is the obligation upon the children? So the Erech Shai, in his commentary to Shulchan Aruch Siman Kuf Pei Hei, he says, what do you mean? The obligation, of course, is upon the parents. And the Avnei Nezer, I think I have the tshuva in the materials that source your gimel, he says, no, the obligation is upon the children. But even though the obligation is upon the children, he says that the minhag is, he says, you look in the second to last paragraph, he says, they're the ones who have the obligation, they're the ones who are getting the benefit, right, that they get to get married. It's just that the mechutanim, the parents pay for them, because, you know, usually they don't have any money, they're just starting out in life. So then the question is, according to the Avnei Nezer, you might make the argument that if the parents aren't able to pay, then the children would be obligated to pay. According to the Erech Shai, it's not clearly, he held that the obligation is only upon the parents and not the children. So I saw Rav Moshe Feinstein was quoted, what seemed to be a very reasonable pshara. He said, it depends who approached the shatran. Who worked together, who had the contact with the shatran, either you approached the shatran approached you, but who was having the interactions? Was it the parents who were interacting with the shatran, or was it the child who was interacting with the shatran? It was the chosin and kala interacting with the shatran, so they have the responsibility. If it was the parents, they have the responsibility. Even so, the Avnei Nezer says the minhag is generally that the parents are going to take this the responsibility upon themselves. the actual amount, if there is a machlokis. So we have the halacha in Hilchos Chivas Poalim, that source Chav Gimel. I'm jumping around a little bit. We say that with workers, if there are different amounts that people are hired for, Hayyim Medina Mishniska B'Shloshim Mishniska Be'Aba, that in certain places they pay $3, in another place $4 an hour, whatever. So if there was no clearly stipulated amount, so then you get paid the lowest rate. So there are certain sites, like dating sites, I think, people sign up for Soyu at Sinai, where I think they have rules. They say, okay, well, if it works out, so here's how much the shadchanus is. Where everybody, but if you agree to the terms and conditions, you're agreeing to a certain amount of shadchanus. The general minhag is, even though Rav Ezra Batsri writes that it's good to stipulate ahead of time exactly what your price is, what the going rate is, says that's not the minhag. The minhag is that it's usually not stated at the very beginning, but you follow whatever is the minhag ha-makom, and if they can't have an agreement on whatever is the minhag ha-makom, so then you go after the lowest amount. And that's what the Maharshal says in the Yam Shel Shlomo Baba Kama, Perek Yud, Simen Lamites. It says, if I would have a case, I didn't put this in the materials, if I would have a case that came in front of me, I would check out in the city what the going rate is in the city. I would just charge whatever is the lowest possible amount in that city. So if a person really wants to make sure, a shatran wants to make sure they'll get paid the full amount without any dispute, so they would stipulate ahead of time. But generally we don't worry about that. Now, if a person has in mind that they're not planning to charge anything, so then that's actually considered by many to be an enforceable mindset, because mechila is something that you can actually do simply in your mind. If you look at source Yud Zayim and Siva Samishpa and Simon Yud Bey Sipkot and Hey, he says that somebody is making a claim for some money that they feel they're owed, but they know that they had in mind to be meichel, to waive the chov, that they weren't going to claim it. They're only claiming it later on because the other party decides that they're going to, they're asking for some counterclaim that it never occurred to them that the other party would ask for. So therefore, as revenge, the claim that they waived, that they now want to assert, the mechila makshava have mechila, because mechila in one's makshava is considered to be mechila. So he ends up saying that we only say this if it's quite clear a person originally had a claim and everybody can tell that they waived it. But he says that's only with respect to an obligation that a person incurred. But if at the very beginning of the transaction, where you invited somebody to eat with you and never intended you're going to charge them, where the obligation never got off the ground, so certainly your makshava that you, when you started the shidduch process, you never intended to charge the person, and then you never indicated otherwise during the entire process, so then if there was clearly a mechila at the beginning that you never ever intended to charge for the shidduch, so then you wouldn't get to charge for the shidduch. Person wants to pay you anyway, so that's their business, but you wouldn't get to charge for the shidduch in such a case. So they talk about, you know, situations where there was a person who wanted to make a shidduch, but they knew that that the parties would never listen to them because one of the parties had very bad feelings towards them and would not respect their suggestion. So they just wrote it on a piece of paper and like left it in their mailbox. Say, oh, I think it would be a good idea for your daughter to go out with this boy. And then the parents researched it on their own and said, oh, we don't know that some malach, whatever, slipped a note into our mailbox suggesting a shidduch. They looked into it and then the parents worked out the shidduch on their own. And then the person afterwards who put the note in wanted to collect, and whoever dealt with the case, whichever posik dealt with the case, said they don't get to collect because there was clearly a mechila. They clearly never had the intention to ever collect this because it would be very likely that they would never be discovered because they didn't disclose their identity. So the fee could potentially be waived. However, the mere fact that a shadchan never mentioned anything about collecting money doesn't mean that the parties are off the hook. Since there is a general convention, there is a general practice to pay the shadchan, so therefore it's assumed that is meant to take place. So just the shadchan is being polite about it and, you know, isn't mentioning it, but it should certainly be paid. Some say that if the shadchan waited 3 years or so after the parties got married and didn't say anything, so at that point in time it's considered to be waived. A 3-year rule, don't know exactly, you know, where the 3 years, you know, comes from, but, you know, at a certain point it's probably a good idea to say something if you really want to collect the fee. There are all these stories about parties who got married and didn't have any children and then realized, oh, we never paid the shadchan, and they paid the shadchan and then they had children, and, you know, don't know exactly how one proves, you know, cause and effect in these types of stories, but nonetheless, it's still certainly a worthy and proper thing to do under those circumstances. Now, it gets a sort of interesting because there can be multiple shadchanim. So you look in some of the sources, like for example, in source. I guess Yud Aleph, where you have this long Piskei Tshuva. So the Piskei Tshuva quotes a number of different opinions about how you break up the Shadchan Sefi. So he quotes, if you look on the top of page 3, he quotes the Ateres Tzvi. He says, Matsasi Kostov Pinkas Harotzos, I saw it written like the Vada Barotzos, the Maskva Gomiyaklu Benayim B'Shovet. You would have somebody who would make the suggestion. They're called the Maskil. And then you have a person who brings the shit up to the finish line, then sort of negotiate with the parties, and they advise the parties, and so forth. So they had a practice that they split it 50%, and the person who kind of helps it along in the middle, there was somebody who would help it along in the middle, doesn't get anything. The Aruch HaShulchan also said, why should the middleman get anything? You know, eliminate the middleman. But nonetheless, he says, so, no, I saw that they split it into three parts. Shlish lemaskli, if you have somebody makes the suggestion, shlish lemsai, and then somebody who kind of like coordinates the original date, so shlish legomer, and then the one who kind of pushes the chassan to propose, I don't know. So they all get one-third of the fee, and then the later poskim say that that it became more of the minug, that the maskil would get one-third, and the gomer would get two-thirds. Let's say that there was no middleman, but just a maskil and a gomer. Now, I have to say that I think that the idea of the gomer in the lingo of the poskim who spoke about a maskil and a gomer was really a person who met with the parents in order to help to finalize the monetary terms of the relationship, of exactly how much each of the parents were going to assist in terms of living arrangements, in terms of dowry, in terms of financial arrangements, children after they would get married to each other. I don't think today that's the role of the shadchan. So since it's not the role of the shadchan today, I don't think that we have so much of this type of situation of maskil and soi and gomer as we used to have. It would be hopelessly confusing. We have more of the idea of maskil. What ends up happening nowadays in terms of confusing cases of shadchanus is where you have a sort of multiple maskilim. You have multiple maskilim where you have one person who advises, who approaches the chassan's parents, and another person who approaches the kallah's parents. So there, the poskim say that you would split it up. If they were only getting one-third, let's say that the idea was presented to the parents, and then the parents decide they're going to finish the shidduch on their own. So according to some poskim, the person who only made the suggestion is only entitled to one-third. If the person only made the suggestion for one side, so maybe they should get one-sixth. And if you have two people, one who went to each side, so maybe each of them would get one-sixth of whatever the going rate is, and then the parents wouldn't have to pay anything else if the parents basically did the rest of the shidduch on their own. And others say, no, if the parents did the rest of the shidduch on their own, so then it's just a continuation from the maskil, and therefore, since they're bali davar, they don't get anything. And somebody should get something, so the maskilim therefore get everything, even though they did not make themselves involved with the coordination of the dates and the advice of the parties until the shidduch actually took place. So these are the types of questions that really depend very much upon minhag ha'makom, Do we say that the shadchan, if he just or she just makes a suggestion and then the parents act upon the suggestion, do we say that they're entitled to the full fee, the full shadchanus, or only one third of the shadchanus? And that really remains a question mark is dependent very much on minhag hamakom. The Avnei Nezer had the case, very interesting case, where somebody had the idea, the shadchan had the idea, they were going to set up this very, very fine fellow, who was the son of a gevir, and he wanted to set up the son of this gevir with the daughter of a different gevir. And the father of the daughter, after there were a lot of negotiations and discussions that took place, decided that he wanted his daughter to marry a different fellow. And maybe the boy who was being proposed was a little bit too young for the daughter in question, and he wanted his daughter to marry an older fellow, but it turned out he had a younger daughter. So then other shadchanim got involved, and they, since the idea had already been in the head of this gevir, that he was told all about this other family, meaning the father of the daughter, was told about this family of the son of this boy who was being proposed to his older daughter, and he said, this boy really seems like a good boy, and he had other shadchanim make the arrangements for this boy to be set up with his younger daughter. So the first shadchan said, I'm the one who introduced you to the boy's family altogether, and therefore I want my shadchanus. So Yavnei Nezer said that this person counts as a mimutza. Why does it count as an emtsai? Not a maskil, not a gomer, but a middleman, a middleman broker. Why is he a middleman broker? Because a maskil is the one who makes a suggestion, this boy should go out with this girl, right? I don't know, but Kodesh Baruch Hu said Bas Ploni, Le Ploni, right? He said this girl should go out with this boy, but this fellow didn't say this particular girl. He said the other girl. He said that the sister should go out with this boy. So therefore, the main job that he did was just making the shidduch pleasant in the eyes of the parents, that the parents should feel that they're compatible with each other, that they like each other. That's something that an emsoi does, that makes sure that the parents are comfortable with the fact that the shidduch is going along, neither the maskil nor the gomer. And therefore, to the extent that there's a minhag that the emsoi guy gets one third, so he's entitled to one third, but he said he's not entitled to a full one third, because he only helped to facilitate the shidduch with respect to the boy, but not with respect to the girl, because he had a different girl in mind, and therefore he ends up with one sixth. So when you get involved with these cases, and you read some of the tshuvos, so you have to do a lot of mathematical calculations here, because, you know, they divide it up into three different categories of shadchanim, and sometimes each of those categories gets divided up into two itself, so you have six, you have twelfths, you have, you know, all kinds of different possible calculations. So one of the other questions that gets discussed is, what if there was one person who started out, but then they really could have finished the entire job, but the parents decided on their own that they didn't want this person to complete the job, they wanted somebody else to complete the job. So does the first person have some sort of a taina to say that had they stayed in the picture, they would have gotten all the shadchanus and they were unfairly terminated? So this is a whole discussion based on a rush that deals with this type of a situation in a broker context, and then it was developed upon by the Noda B'Yehuda that speaks about it as well. And the Piskei Tshuva in source Yud Aleph speaks about kind of how this plays out. And he says, Shidduchim are different from a brokerage case. He says, in a brokerage case, the Rosh said that sometimes it's ramos, that a person is really just trying to get out of paying their fee or whatever, and they take the suggestion and then they run with it until the end of the transaction, and they try to deprive the broker from being able to collect their full fees. But he says, when it comes to shidduchim are much more complicated. You look at the bottom of page 2, about 5 lines from the bottom. But shidduchim yeshabei pratim levad sachon eden. He says that there are so many things that have to be worked out. Kmo ischaibus, mizonos, redivo, begodim, and matanos. You have to work out all the details. That's why I say that the role that was played by their shadchanim, much more complicated. Now, our shadchanim is just getting the parties engaged. We don't have to worry too much about how they're going to manage their finances. You know, Hashem Yazor. We all understand that, right? The Kameh Pa'amim, it's like, you know, the Mechutan who said that he met with his future son-in-law and said, how are you going to manage your finances? He said, Hashem Yazor, Hashem Yazor. So he says, wow, this is such a fine fellow. He thinks that I'm Hashem. The Kameh Pa'amim, Bishvil, Dover, Katan misperedes hachavila v'nisbadel shidoch. He says that there are so many things that could happen that could cause the shidoch to become ruined. Olakach calls man shel hishvei osam mashat chanavishim b'chol apartim ashel nisha shum davar gadol katan shitzarok davar zet ayin lo nigmar shidoch ayidei ashatkan. That in a financial deal, once you have a basic term, so then the rest of it happens more automatically. That's what he's assuming. He says the shiduchim, I mean, I was involved with complicated financial deals and things always, you know, were going wrong up until, you know, the 11th hour and so forth. But he says shiduchim are even more complicated than that. There were so many things that could go, that could go wrong. So therefore, he says that it's more permissible or understandable to bring somebody else into the picture. And if you brought somebody else into the picture, so then the first shatkun would only be entitled to one third of the fee as opposed to the entirety of the fee, and that would be okay. But Moshe Feinstein has a truven Choshe Mishpat Chelak Aleph Siman Mem Tes at Source Chav, in which he says that it may depend on whether the person was a yored, whether the person the kind of volunteered to be a shatkun, or whether the person was hired. If they were hired, they're more like a poel, and then if they're doing their job, they're not nisrashil, they're not slacking off or running away on their own, and they're willing to do the rest of the job, so then he says that it would be wrong to bring somebody else in. But others say that no, sometimes the feeling is that the shatkun was the right person to suggest the match in the first place, but not necessarily to bring it to the finish line, so you can't necessarily get so upset about that that situation. The Chut HaShani, quoted by the Piskei Tshuva in Source Yudbeis, has the following case, where there was a shatkun that went to the brother-in-law of an almana. There was a woman who was a widow, and he suggested to the brother-in-law this would be a good idea to make the shidduch, and the brother-in-law said, great, I'll be in touch with her and I'll take care of the shidduch. And then after the shidduch was taken care of, so the brother-in-law said, okay, I want to be able to get the shatkanis money. And the shatkan said, what are you talking about? I made the shidduch. You didn't make the shidduch. So the Chut HaShani says that it really depends, that if it was a type of situation where it would not have been proper etiquette for the shatkan to have approached the widow directly, so he kind of needed a close family member, so the close family member was really just serving as like the parent, the surrogate parent for this person, to be the person who would, you know, speak to the party directly. But if the shatkan really could have approached the almana directly and just mentioned the idea to the brother-in-law, so then the brother-in-law becomes much more of the shatkan. So you have to be careful in these situations to make your intentions clear, because otherwise a person who thinks that they're just hiring an assistant might actually be delegating the shidduch to a different person to serve as a shatkan. These are all, you know, interesting cases in the event that you would have multiple shadchanim and the like. But there were a lot of other questions as well. I remember that I was once seeing somebody in a different country, in Eretz Yisrael. I was here and the girl was in Eretz Yisrael. And there was a shadchan who was facilitating this particular shidduch. Okay, but I figured I was always appreciative. It was nice, you know, somebody, you know, came up with the idea, whatever. And there were certain questions the girl had or whatever. This is back in the day when if you had a conversation with somebody in Eretz Yisrael, it actually cost money, like before WhatsApp was created and so forth. So at a certain point, you know, she said to me, I want to, I spent some time on these telephone calls and I have a telephone bill. I want you to pay the telephone bill. So, you know, so I thought, okay, that's an interesting one. I hadn't heard that before. The general rule when it comes to shadchanis is when the shadchanis get paid. Shadchanis gets paid when there is an actual engagement, right? And then the question is, does it get paid at the time of the engagement? Or does it get paid for the wedding? Are you paying for an engagement? Or are you paying for a wedding? Nafka mina, if the engagement gets broken off. Engagement gets broken off. So you look in the Aruch HaShulchan. Aruch HaShulchan, source Hey, says that b'mechum medina seno aminag ha'pashut, the minag is l'shalem shatkanos ha'achak siva satanoi miyad. that the Shadchanus is paid once the deal is sealed. When it's sealed, it's sealed when you have a vort. You have a vort, you write up the Tanoim. So he says that even if the engagement gets broken afterwards, he quotes the Taz, saying the Shadchan still deserves to get paid. The Fiminageno of a Gemara, Indian based at Tanoim. Who cares if they break off the engagement? Shadchan wants their money. Hello, Gamarinian. He did get, you know, a good engagement out of it. He says, Salamaze Dome. What is this like? This is like, come on, let's say they got married. Let's say that the minhag would be that they would only get married, get paid after, the Shadchan would only get paid after the couple is married. And let's say they then get divorced. That happened. My wife made a shidduch a number of years ago, and then the couple got divorced, you know, several years later. She, like, asked me, do I have to get back the shadchanos? I said, absolutely not.
Begiresh es ishto de
bevada.
Is that absolutely?
What?
Is that absolutely not?
No, you don't have to give it, unless, this is what they talk about. Let's say that the couple got married because of the fact that the shadchan withheld very important information.
Right.
So the shadchan therefore was derelict in his, or her duty, because they withheld important information. They misled the parties. If the shadchan is responsible for misleading the parties, so then Rabbastri says that the shadchan would have to return, would have to return the money. Right. Let's say also that a couple, broke off an engagement, because of the fact that there was some major blemish, okay, that the shadchan didn't know about, that one of the parties withheld from the other party. So then in such a case, we're talking about schar tircha, so the Pisrei Choshen says that you can't necessarily pay the shadchan when it turns out that the whole thing was based upon false pretenses. On the other hand, the shadchan didn't know this at the time. One of the parties, you know, withheld some very bad medical condition from the other party, whatever the case may be. So then that would be a type of case where the shadchan would be entitled at least to their schar tircha. Maybe not to shadchanos fees, because they didn't end up getting married, but normally we say that a shadchan doesn't get anything. They don't get schar tircha. Not like the case that I had. I mean, whatever, the person asked for the money, so I paid for the money, whatever. But normally the shadchan does not get schar tircha, or the payment for, you know, the shadchanos, which generally is viewed as including schar tircha, until the deal is sealed, because that's the way the brokerage works. If it works out, you get, and if it doesn't work out, you don't get anything. That's a chance that you take when you're in this type of a business. But if the reason it didn't work out was because one party was, you know, at fault for deceiving the other party, so then that party should be responsible to pay at least for out-of-pocket expenses that were suffered by the shadchan. However, certainly, if there was no misbehavior on the part of the shadchan and the parties actually got married, so then the shadchan doesn't have to return the money. However, it says that the Aruch HaShulchan, what I think is a very reasonable statement, even though the Aruch HaShulchan doesn't necessarily subscribe to it himself in terms of what he says either here in Siman Nun and Eben Ezer, says Amnam Epshalomar Dizesha Minag Shalim Achar Tanaim, says the fact that there's a minag to pay after the Tanaim, or after, you know, at the time of the Vort, Nesha Salkan Shli, and not take a Shidduch, because they're assuming that the Shidduch is going to make its way to the Nisuin, that they're going to eventually get married. That's, most engagements do make their way, not always, but most of them make their way to an actual marriage. But we not Kohen Lehem Lashalim, but if it would be broken, so then it would not be necessary to pay. But if there is no minag, then it's paid after the wedding. So what ends up happening is like this, that really we generally assume, I saw that the Sefer on Shadchan is quoted with Shlomo Miller to say that the minag is that we're really paying for the wedding and not for the engagement itself. And if the engagement is broken, so then for sure you don't have to pay. But the question is, what if they already paid? And the shadchan says, I don't want to give back the money, because from my perspective, the minhag is you pay for the engagement, and you paid me the money, so that showed that you shared the same perspective. I'm really sorry that your engagement, you know, got broken off. I'll give you both a 5% discount rate on my next shidduch for you, but I'm not returning the money. I saw, you know, in this sefer and elsewhere as well, he said, well, if they paid it back, they paid the money already, so then it's kind of hard, absent, you know, a clear stipulation or a very clear minhag, it's hard to get it back from the shadchan at that point in time. I mean, I think it's a proper thing to do if you're the shadchan to give it back. If somebody would ask me, you know, I'd probably encourage it. But if the shadchan didn't want to give it back, so then presumably the shadchan would have the upper hand, at least if the money had already been paid. If the shatkan sabotages the shidduch, so there's a story, and I think this is in the Chashukei Chemed of Rav Zilberstein. It talks about the shatkan was kind of like a high-end shatkan. They say if you have a high-end shatkan can, you know, charge more money. They're dealing with, you know, wealthy individuals and so forth. They could charge more money. Or sometimes you have a shatkan who's in the business of sending up people who are very difficult to set up. They might have various, you know, challenges, disabilities, or whatever. They can also charge more money. So it's understood that it's variable, you know, based on the circumstances. So one case where a shatkan had set up a certain person and the shidduch was going well, but then they got a request from a gevir, like somebody much more wealthy was willing to spend like a ton of money, that they wanted specifically this, you know, girl who was already dating this other boy. So he went over to the girl's parents of the girl who was already dating somebody else and said, "Oh, I'm really sorry to tell you, but the boy, you know, doesn't think that it's for him, so, you know, we're going to have to break it off." And then went to the boy and said, "I'm really sorry, but the girl doesn't think it, you know, you're for her, so, you know, she has to break it off." And then the girl became available, and he was so excited, so he set up this girl with this other, you know, Gevir's son. But unfortunately, it didn't work out. But then after it didn't work out, then these two other couples were talking to each other, and, you know, I think, like, one father said to the other father, "I don't understand, like, you know, why your daughter decided to break over." "So what do you mean? It was your son who broke up with my daughter." And then they realized what happened, and they said, "Oh, so they should really go out with each other again," and they went out with each other, and they got married, and now the original shatkan wanted his shatkanus money. So the question was, do we say that because of the fact that he really was the maska, because if not for him, they would not have known about each other. They wouldn't have become acquainted. So then maybe he's, you know, entitled to his money. So the psak in that case, because Zilberstein's psak was no, he's not really such a fish. He's not entitled to his money, despite the fact that really, what's the main thing that a maskil is paid for is just being mamsi, the parties to each other, that they're sort of introducing the parties to each other. That's kind of the lashon, that if you look in on page 3 in the Chu of the Sheb Yaakov, I'm just kind of introducing you or familiarizing you with the main tshuvas on the topic. Many of them are these tshuvas that are quoted by the Pesach Tshuva, and all the literature, the halachic literature, they all quote these various tshuvas and so forth. So the Sheb Yaakov has this lashon. If you go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 lines down towards the end of the line, he says, "Mikol makom hu ayah mamsi l'shidduch alah shel yado niskala hadaber." He says if you have parties, one that you have a maskil who doesn't necessarily finish the job but began the job, he says that he always gets something because his job, he's not paid for his tircha per se, or she's not paid for her tircha per se. What is a shatkan paid for? They're paid for the fact that they introduce the idea. They introduce the couple to each other. That's why they say that, let's say that a shatkan comes to a person and says, "Oh, I want to suggest this girl for your son." And at that point in time, the person says, "Great, I'm willing to go ahead, but only if you don't charge any money. Only if you don't charge any money." So even if the person then, the person goes ahead and they finish the shidduch, despite the fact that they said that this is only if you don't charge any money, it was too late. Because at the point in time in which the shatkan made the suggestion, they had already been mamsi. They already had generated this idea that this family should look into this other boy that may not necessarily have been generated otherwise. If it would have clearly been generated otherwise, so that's a shiloh that has to be dealt with. But if the idea would not have been put in their head otherwise, so then the person who generated the idea is generally entitled to the money, even if they do nothing else at that point in time. The person says, "Well, I do want to get paid." The person says, "Well, I'm sorry, I don't want to deal with you anymore." And then they don't deal with the shatkan anymore. They're still entitled to get paid because of the fact that they made the suggestion. The time to say that "I don't want to pay you" to the shatkan is before the shatkan suggests anything. What the shatkan gets out of the words from their mouth, they have to speak very quickly, but they're good at this. You know, if you're a shatkan, you have to speak very quickly and get out the name. And then if the person, you know, thinks about the name and is putting their head on that basis, so then the shatkan already earned, at the very least, the fee of the maskil, which could be, you know, at least the one-third fee. It could be, by the way, that Bisman has said the maskil is even more significant. When they split up, the job of the maskil, that the maskil gets one-third and the gomer gets two-thirds, I think that's when the gomer was really negotiating all financial terms. If no financial terms, it could be nowadays the maskil should be at least entitled to 50%. If not, you know, I don't see that two-third, one-third division necessarily being quite as compelling. But in any event, the argument as to why the person here was not entitled is because they basically were mochel their fee. They were mochel their fee at the point in time in which they sabotaged the original shidduch. They said because then there was no hope or desire for this shidduch to work anymore, so therefore that's considered to be number one a mechila, and probably a yush as well. Probably that they gave up hope of ever being able to collect. So a question as to whether money is owing to you, whether there is such a thing as a yush. There isn't such a thing as yush, but the Ramah seems to indicate that there is such a thing as yush. I have that source. Source Yud Ches and Simon Kuf Samach Gimel, that there's such an idea of being Nisyayishu Minachob, so therefore, in this case, for sure, the person would not be entitled to collect the Shadchanus fee. And in fact, according to like the rest of the story, according to the footnote in the Sefer, none less than Rechaim Kanievsky Zatzal, certainly a mitzvah to mention him whenever we can during this period of time, we're mourning his Petira. So Rechaim Kanievsky said that it was a mitzvah to publicize that nobody should use the Shadchan anymore after somebody, after this person would act in such a nefarious and dastardly fashion. If a Shadchan makes a guzma, like a Shadchan says, this is a case that's discussed in the Sefer Mishpatei HaTorah, the Shadchan makes a claim to the Kala's family, or maybe let's say to the Chosin's family, that the Kala's father is going to pay for an apartment in Yerushalayim. The couple is going to get married, and he's going to pay for an apartment in Yerushalayim. And it's on that basis that the Kala's family, that the Chosin's family, is very, very excited. Oh wow, this is great! They'll have a place to live, and that's one of the reasons that they're very excited about the shidduch. And then the shidduch goes through in the end, and right before the shidduch is finalized, they're told that oh no, it was a mistake. That really the Kala's family is not going to pay for this dira in Yerushalayim, but the couple, they don't care. They want to get married anyway, so they get engaged. And now the father of the chassan doesn't want to have to pay the shadchan because the shadchan misled them. So here we say that this was the psak in the Sefer Mishpatei HaTorah. You can maybe challenge this psak. He said that if the couple could have backed out when they found out that the information wasn't true, but since they decided to get engaged anyway, and the shadchan is the one that brought them to marriage, so therefore in such a case the shadchan is entitled to get paid. If they would break up the engagement, or they wouldn't get engaged altogether, so fine, so then he's not going to get paid anything, but in the end it wasn't a mistake, and it certainly wasn't a type of mistake that would cause them to break up the engagement. So the chassan's family might say, oh, but we could have maybe married somebody else where they would have offered a deal in Yerushalayim. So who says? Who says? Even if that was part of the deal that somebody else was offering, who says that the shidduch would have worked out? So therefore, that wouldn't be enough to deprive somebody of their shadchanus fee, although, I wonder whether whether the person, deserves some sort of a slap on the wrist. The way that the book presented the story was that the shadchan kind of like engaged in some sort of like wishful thinking mistake. Like they knew that this was something that the Kala's father had once said, oh, I would really like to be able to support, a son to learn in Israel, and therefore he just always has a generous spirit, so he'll probably buy them an apartment. So he made it in a way that it wasn't, quite so nefarious in this particular case. So if you look at the Mordechai, towards the end of the materials, this is already in source 22. So the source proprietor is just the Bitzel HaChokmah, who says that it sort of goes against Rav Moshe a little bit. Rav Moshe had said if you hire the shadchan, so you can't really replace the shadchan in the middle. He says, look, people have all kinds of reasons to replace the shadchan, and if they do, so it's hard to call it like gezel gomor. But he said that as a general rule, even if the parents wanted to bring another shadchan into the picture, it's not right for one shadchan to invade the turf of the first shadchan and say, oh, I could do a better job at bringing this to conclusion. Again, I think that nowadays the way our shidduchim work, we don't really, it's more a question of how many cooks are in the kitchen in terms of creating the shidduch opportunity in the first place. How many people presented the idea and who's really the one who got the couple together in the first place. But in terms of replacing a shadchan in the middle, I don't know that happens so much per se. Sometimes you have a shidduch that breaks up one time and then it's resuscitated later on, and the original shatkan's not in the picture. So do we say the original shatkan gets credit? So some say, well, it depends. Was the person, let's say the chassan and kala were engaged, I mean, the chassan and kala went out and it didn't work out, and then the kala married another man and got divorced, and then some other shatkan got her back to the chassan. So there, the Erech Shai says that's called panim chadashos bo lekan. She was already married to somebody else, so the first shidduch has kind of come to an end. But if they just broke up and then 3 months later they come together, probably the original shatkan should get something. If he was the one, or she was the one responsible for putting the idea in their head, we probably should get something. Some say that, you know, up until 6 months, then they're still considered in the picture. Some say up until 1 year, they're still considered in the picture. What if the girl got engaged to another man and then the engagement broke off and then another shatkan brought it forward? So do we say there's panim chadashos bo lekan if it was just a broken engagement, or only if it was a marriage that ended in divorce? Maybe it depends. Maybe if the engagement was within like a month of when the couple, I had this. I went, I don't know, I'm telling so many personal stories, but I went out with with somebody, and we went out 6 times, and then she got engaged to somebody. Like, and it was like, I couldn't believe it. Like, I didn't hear from her for a couple of weeks. She said, how come I didn't hear from you? She said, oh, I have news for you, I'm engaged. It turns out she had been going out with some fellow for like a year or so before she went out with me. They, you know, they had broken up, and then he came to her when he saw that she was dating another fellow and said, oh, I can't believe I'd let you go. You know, I love you more than anything, and whatever he said, and I want to marry you. And so she got engaged to him, and then about a month later they broke off the engagement, and then she wanted to go out with me again. So I mean, I didn't, but it's okay. But in this scenario, maybe. However, the point is in such a situation where it's in a very, very short time frame, so then I could see an argument that it hasn't really, you know, come to a complete, you know, end or closure or whatever. At least, you know, that it would still be shy if the one person is still thinking about the other person. So maybe the shatkan, if the couple would come back together under those circumstances, maybe the original shatkan should get something. I don't know. These are difficult questions. So the Mordechai points out, he talks about the idea of schar tircha, which was that other case that I spoke about, that as a general rule, a shatkan doesn't get schar tircha unless, let's say, they were dealing with somebody who's not in the parsha of shatranos, and that person was recruited, and you asked the person to do a special favor in order to facilitate a shidduch, and they weren't a professional shatkan where they have sort of the idea that they're not going to get, you know, anything unless the shidduch is finalized. So then he says, under those circumstances, maybe the person really would be obligated. They had sort of a fight between the person who hired like one individual to entice a bacher to come from a far distance. And he had to pay, you know, money in order to get the bacher to come. And then he wanted to get paid tesba of a dinar. And the person who was trying to make the shidduch for his son or daughter it was a sister in this case, said, I never promised you unless the bacher would marry, you know, my sister. And they didn't get married, so therefore I don't owe you anything. So he says that it really depends on what the terms were. He said that if yesh the doctor, gemayi ruvin sakar shlichos lo amenashi iskayim chayev l'shalem. If it was just an extra special favor that had nothing to do with serving as a shatkan per se, but just doing a special, you know, standalone favor, then he would have to pay. But if it was clear that it was in the context of working like as a shatkan, so then you only get paid even for schar tioch if it does work out. As part of Shimon Legami, kikama shatkanim yugim, kikama shatkanim. This is what I find to be very interesting, Lashon. This is from the Mordechai. This is going back, you know, 800 years or so. Kikama shatkanim yugim lirik. Motsim habe ve'ena matzlichen. He says, this is the nature of being a shatkan. The nature of being a shatkan is that you work hard, long hours, and often you have nothing to show for your efforts. Umapsidim torcham v'yitziyosam, and you lose all of the trouble and all of your expenses and so forth. Okay, so he says that that's, you know, it comes with the territory. It comes with the territory. He says that if a shidduch really would have been brought to fruition and the shatkan did everything that they were supposed to do, and then one person acted, sort of betrayed their promises to the shatkan in the end, and that's what caused the shidduch to break off, so then they might be entitled to their expenses under those circumstances, but otherwise not. So the Chubas Van Hagos Well, Sternbach says something interesting about the resolution of these types of disputes when you do have, you know, conflicts about how much money should be paid and so forth in all of these different cases. So he says that first of all, I'll quote an Arach HaShulchan in Siman Kuf Pei Hei Sif Yud Beis. He says the V'derek Klal Yef Shelios Didim Kavuim Binyanim Elu. As a general rule, it's very hard to have actual, you know, clear-cut klolim. I think we showed that there's no, like, sugi in the Gemara that deals with shatchanim per se. We have, like, midrashim that talk about it was emulating Kodesh Baruch Hu, and we found some sort of a context where we can compare it to a broker or a yore, the tokstei chavero, and that's what kind of gives us the parameters as to how we're going to deal with these obligations. But it's very difficult to find chapter and verse in terms of the clear-cut rules. So he says, "V'dayanim l'mari einayim v'bonas libam yishpotu tzedek." Says the dayanim have to look at every single case and look at their understanding of the circumstances in order to judge each case righteously, in order to judge each case appropriately. So the so my comment about this is that better that it not come in front of the dayanim. If the whole idea of a shiduchim is that we really are trying to, you know, emulate a Kodesh Baruch Hu, do this tremendous mitzvah, bring people together, best it shouldn't really end up in a courtroom. Like if the couple gets it, I say this with broken engagements as well. Say that when it comes to broken engagements, I don't really want to have to litigate broken engagement cases, you know, in front of the best. And like if it didn't work out, like parties should, they should make a pshara between themselves, they should work things out. So I found that Rav Moshe Sternbach had similar type language that when these things don't work out, find a rub. Like if the parties need to, you know, there's some sort of dispute about Shatchanus money, it's a dove of muse, I feel, that to bring it, you know, in the domain of a best, and we had at one point in time when I was at the Beis Din of America, so there was a shidduch, a shadchanis organization. I mean, an organization doing shidduchim, and they wanted to put in their contract with, you know, all the people who signed up for shidduchim. They wanted to put in their contract that whenever there would be a dispute regarding shadchanis fees and the like, so there would be like a choice of forum clause that they would come to the Beis Din of America for an adjudication of the dispute. So they asked me like if I could come up with language about that, and they wanted to put in all of their contracts, and I actually refused. And you know, you could say, oh, why did I do that? So I actually refused to do it. I said, I don't want these cases to be disputed in Beis Din. I want it to be sort of an attitude that's being done for a mitzvah, and it's a nice thing. Yes, it's a halach and shulchan aruch that a person is entitled to collect. There's a type of sarsaris or whatever, but if it doesn't work out, it's just, it doesn't warrant that level of nastiness. It's better that people should just be meichel, they say, okay, so whatever, the people didn't appreciate the full extent of their obligation to pay, whatever it is, but it's not something that I felt, you know, deserved to end up being this type of a nasty monetary dispute. Whenever we're dealing with matters of marriage or doing a mitzvah, a sakta priya varibya, I wanted to leave it alone from that. And if you look at the Lashon, this is the last paragraph of the materials, page 7, very last paragraph. He says, Vida she'en l'kapek shatkum v'nom l'sham lo s'skava k'roi, v'yadua shlifamim yesh lozub tzaro l'zug tzaros, lo aleinu, o ein lahem yiladim. So you see, he comes up with this as well, that, you know, it's a good segula, certainly, to pay. That's what you should tell people. Pay so you'll have, you know, you'll be zochet the children. V'tolen asiru me'achet shal kibbo shatkanam v'magia lahem, l'chein roi, l'shal rab, l'shalim apip k'shesh b'zeriv. If there is a quarrel, there is a dispute, go to Rabbi Matenki. Go to the local Orthodox rabbi. Rabbi Matenki is shaking his head. But go to a local Orthodox rabbi, go, or, you know, have it, the Beis Din administrator, you know, work out some sort of a mediation. We spoke about Pshara recently, but best to leave it out of the nastiness of, you know, some sort of a full-fledged litigation or din Torah. So as we enter into the Chodesh HaGula, Benisan Higalo, Benisan Yasidim Higalo, so we should all experience the Geula of bringing the Mashiach closer by marrying off our own children, family members, and other members of the community, so that we can bring Mashiach closer.